Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today I have a very important show and a very special guest that I think when people learn about this, they're going to be amazed what we don't know. This is Dr. Carol Henricks, who's joining me today. She's a neurologist, and she's the medical director of Healing Arizona Veterans, and she's an authority on hyperbaric oxygen therapy. It's been around for quite a while, but I don't think many people know a lot about hyperbaric oxygen therapy. But what we're going to discuss today is its role in treating PTSD and traumatic brain injury, which are two, I think, seem to be rising diagnoses, especially within the military population and police officers and firemen and women. And I see these people twice a week in my office. And some of the stories that I've heard over the past 9 years or so that I've been doing it, it's been heartbreaking, where they lose their quality of life. They've served our country. They come back, and they're not functional, but they look fine. They don't have a limb that's lost, but their function, their integration back into their family and into society is impaired because their brain function is not right. And we're seeing suicides go through the roof in the military. I think one statistic says there's about 22 a day at this point. And part of it is the effects of brain injury, but there's nothing being done. I can't tell you, when we talk about the medicines that the soldiers are taking, there's a laundry list of drugs, sometimes two of the same type of drug, and they're not better. So let's talk about, and that's one of the goals of our show, is to fix the problem, not just medicate and put a Band-Aid on the symptom. So I wanted to thank you, Dr. Henricks, for coming on at such short notice. I think I really appreciate your time. I respect what you do, and I want my listeners to know everything about you. So, again, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself, how did you get into this?
Oh, thank you. Well, by training, I'm a neurologist specialist. I went through medical school, did my neurology residency, and was chief resident. Then I did a fellowship in EEG, epilepsy, and sleep disorders, and then another fellowship in behavioral neurology. And after I finished my training, I learned about hyperbaric oxygen therapy. I was at a meeting where there were a lot of European doctors, and they were talking. The meeting was about acute stroke management, and the European doctors said, how the Americans be talking about acute stroke management if they're not talking about hyperbaric oxygen therapy? I had never heard about hyperbaric oxygen therapy in this context, and so I started looking into it and reading and looking at research, and I was like, wow, I know this is going to help. I know this is going to work for neurologic conditions. I know that hyperbaric oxygen therapy is just going to be a powerful tool that's going to heal a lot of different things. Now, we know the physiology of why hyperbaric oxygen therapy is a healing therapy, and I knew that it would be something that would help brain injury, a lot of different brain injury conditions. So I learned about it in 2003, and by 2004, I had my own center up and running. I have a 6-person hyperbaric oxygen chamber, and so I thought about what's the best way to really help somebody heal, to really help somebody to be well, and I started looking into all the adjunctive therapies and nutrient optimization so that when people got in the chamber, they would have their best chance to heal. And then, of course, as a neurologist specialist, I looked into what other adjunctive therapies might help people to truly recover their function. So I've been doing this for, 12 years now. And over these years, I've also been reaching out to the VA and to the military, and there's actually other people on a national level who are using hyperbaric oxygen therapy to help military veterans. I've been doing that since 2004, but the research of Dr. Paul Hartsch has really been focused on helping military veterans. He has published research, and he and Dr. William Duncan, who developed the first official Patriot Clinic in the United States, have been to Washington, D.C. more than 300 times with this message. And it is really disturbing that the message hasn't gotten out there.
I know you probably can't answer this question, you know, completely, but in your gut, what does it say to you that the congressmen, women in D.C., the people in the Veterans Administration are not paying attention to this message, that they would just ignore it?
Well, I think it's a multifactorial problem. I think that, I don't know what your experience in medical school was, but my experience in medical school was they taught us over and over again that if you have a brain injury, there's nothing you can do to help yourself, mm-hmm. and there's nothing you can do to heal. And I think that message got through loud and clear, and in terms of brain injury, the focus was on the best thing is to never have one. And, of course, I still agree with that, but it didn't seem like it should be true that there's nothing you can do to help yourself after you've had a brain injury. So I think that's one thing. And that's why I think it would take a huge paradigm shift in our thinking to say, oh, what can we do to heal the brain, as opposed to just medicate the brain and treat the symptoms of the brain injury. The other problem, I think, is the overdependence on pharmaceuticals as being the complete solution to all of our medical problems. We're so focused on using medications. I think of the bugs and drugs semester in medical school, where we learn which specific antibiotic will treat which specific infection. We're taught that, you know, there's very precise medications that are necessary for different kinds of healing instead of a broader approach to healing in general.
I think you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head. It seems that the pharmaceutical industry has completely integrated itself into the medical education system. And that's not always been the case. I mean, was it the Flexner Report, basically, that people should look that up? It changed the paradigm of medical education, and it left more of a holistic, natural approach to take a drug to fix it. And that's a problem. I don't think any one way is a way to fix anything. Not everybody works the same way. Every brain, every body is different. So to apply the same treatment to everybody, it never works. And even if you look at and I'm sure you can confirm this yourself too, these studies that the drug companies do never have everybody in their treatment group. You may not have women in some, you may not have children in others, you may not have black people in others, yet they've applied the results to a group, to everybody, basically. And they treat people off-label, and it's not working. It's costing us a boatload of money, though.
Well, I think, you know, the other part of the problem is the direction that the healthcare system is going is to try to find a single protocol that's going to apply to every patient that's being treated. And we all know that the most important part of medicine is the doctor-patient relationship, and the time that we spend with our patients, knowing them as individuals and knowing all the things that are impacting their health.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So let's talk a bit about hyperbaric therapy exactly. What is it? Because I think people have no conception of it.
To many people think of hyperbaric oxygen therapy as just being a treatment for the bends. And more recently, there's been a growing awareness of hyperbaric oxygen therapy to treat a diabetic foot ulcer. But the important thing that makes hyperbaric oxygen therapy a powerful tool is the tremendously enhanced oxygen delivery that you get when you breathe 100% medical oxygen under pressure. So, for example, if one of the veterans is going into my chamber to treat their traumatic brain injury symptoms, the pressure they're being treated at is 1.5 atmospheres, and that's 0.5 atmospheres above ambient atmospheric pressure, and they're breathing 100% medical oxygen from the oxygen doer in my hazmat room at the back of my treatment center, and that enhances oxygen availability by 700%. So how do we increase the oxygen carrying capacity of blood? We know that on each hemoglobin molecule, you can only carry 8 oxygens. So you're not going to make the hemoglobin molecule carry more oxygen, but what happens is you dissolve little oxygen bubbles into the plasma of the blood. So it's just like bubbles in soda. You dissolve a lot more oxygen bubbles, and that's how you enhance the oxygen carrying capacity. So what happens when you blast, give a blast of oxygen? You create direct cellular healing into the injured tissue. You enhance the release of stem cells from bone marrow. You develop new blood vessel growth into injured tissue. And oxygen radicals act very differently in a hyperoxic environment as opposed to a hypoxic environment. In a hyperoxic environment, these oxygen radicals interact at a DNA level and modify gene expression, and they upregulate healing factors, and they downregulate destructive and inflammatory processes. We know all this from the basic science research that's been so extensively done as they've been looking at healing diabetic foot ulcers. So all of this basic science, cellular physiology is very well documented.
So you're saying you can take a portion of the body, whether that be brain, whether that be a foot, where you don't have oxygen because the vascular system is damaged, maybe, you know, diabetic foot ulcer,
yes,
et cetera, and you create new vascular channels, and you're bringing oxygen to an area that didn't have it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's one mechanism. But even when you hyperoxygenate blood, you know, you diffuse a tremendous amount more oxygen into the injured tissue. And one of the ways that the researchers talk about it is that you blast the mitochondria with the oxygen, and you blast. You tremendously enhance the cellular energy and start to trigger the healing reactions.
I can't name one medication that's capable of doing that. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I think this is a really important conversation that we're having with Dr. Hendricks, who is a neurologist and who has spent 12 years of her life pursuing this and becoming an expert in hyperbaric oxygen treatment for various neurological disorders. It's not just traumatic brain injury. I'm looking at the website, and people should go to northstarbot.com, and that's Northstar Hyperbaric Northstar Neurology. I think that's your actual company, isn't it? Your actual office.
Yes. I have two practices. I have North Star Neurology, which is my regular neurology practice, and then North Star Hyperbaric, which is my treatment center, and Healing Arizona Veterans is the nonprofit that I started, and Patriot Clinic Grassroots Movement is an initiative of Healing Arizona Veterans to try to develop treatment centers for veterans that can work alongside the VA hospital system in order to provide these alternative treatments for veterans.
Gotcha. And that's, yeah, it's yeoman's work. Just the fact that a vet doesn't have to worry about money and they can actually go in and get treated is a huge thing. But let's...
We're hoping that the Concerned Veterans for America initiative to make the voucher system for veterans work is going to allow the veterans to get treatment at these proposed Patriot Clinic treatment centers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking also at the site about other neurological disorders that can be treated or benefited by hyperbaric therapy. And am I right that things like sleep disorder, stroke, multiple sclerosis, ALS, and I saw fibromyalgia as well. Are these things also that can be benefited by hyperbaric therapy?
Absolutely. Absolutely, there is benefit, and what you have to look at is what is the root cause of this disease process.
Mm-hmm.
In England, it's much more common for people to use hyperbaric oxygen therapy to treat their multiple sclerosis than it is for them to treat with any medication. Stroke, absolutely. I understand from my colleagues in Europe that if somebody comes into the emergency room with symptoms of stroke, they try to get them into the hyperbaric chamber within 3 hours of onset to minimize the stroke damage. I understand that in Japan, if you call their 911 and you might have had a heart attack or stroke, they will arrive at your house in a hyperbaric ambulance. This is technology that's being used much more around the world than it's being used here. The other issue is, for example, diagnosis like ALS. It turns out that only 10% of people diagnosed with ALS actually have the genetic disorder that seems to trigger the ALS symptoms, and the underlying root cause might have more to do with heavy metal toxicity and a number of other pathological processes.
Wow, that's amazing. I had no idea. I always thought it was genetic only. So environmental can also be a trigger for these things.
Yes, and therefore there's potential, you know, help for healing with the detoxification of hyperbaric oxygen therapy and the direct cellular healing. One of the issues with neurologic conditions is, for many of them, we don't have a precise test that says you have Parkinson's or mm-hmm. you have ALS or you have Alzheimer's disease. What we do is we look at the clinical state of the patient and the clinical progression, and that's how the diagnosis is made. There's not an absolute definitive test.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a litmus test, I guess you could say, for those diagnoses.
But you can say that
there seems to be many underlying root causes when you look at the clinical picture and the differential diagnosis for what might cause that clinical picture. It's usually long.
Well, let's talk about the other side. When you do the treatment and the patient has undergone it, the treatment, and their symptoms are better or in some instances gone, who can argue with the fact that it worked?
Well, it's often determined to be a fluke when people improve, an unexplained fluke.
You know, if I had the disease and I had the fluke, I'd be pretty happy.
Dr. Paul Hart down at LSU working with the neurology department there and developing protocols, hyperbaric treatment protocols, mm-hmm. to treat a wide range of neurologic conditions, neurologic presentations. So I'm hoping that through his research and because of his reputation as the chief researcher in the United States, that that will start to bring attention to this different way of thinking.
I hope so. I mean, just when you think about the pathophysiology and how it works, I can see this being applied to a boatload of medical conditions. What about things like small vessel disease, where you have dementia because of poor blood flow to the brain? Is that something that you foresee could help treat those patients?
Absolutely. You know, the small blood vessel disease or deep white matter ischemic changes, as mm-hmm. we see on the MRI, absolutely the enhanced oxygen delivery can help to change that.
And you mentioned Alzheimer's as well.
Yes, I mean, I think originally when the term Alzheimer's was coined, it was referring to a specific genetic condition where people developed a dementia at a very early age and there was a familial inheritance pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Now the term Alzheimer's is very, very widely used, specifically because when you use the term Alzheimer's, at least a number of years ago, it entitled patients with memory problems to certain medications, goods, and services. So the term Alzheimer's became broadly used for people with any cognitive decline. But cognitive decline, you know, an Alzheimer's pattern also has many different causes.
So that sounds exactly what you said about the ALS disease as well.
Yes, and when you look in a neurology textbook and you look at, you know, differential diagnosis of all these clinical presentations, there's very long lists of different things that can cause the same clinical presentation.
And fibromyalgia is one of those catch-all diseases that people seem to be getting diagnosed with more and more, but there's no treatment for it, at least not until now. I mean, hyperbaric therapy, what's the pathophysiology of that, in your opinion? I always thought fibromyalgia was more of a problem with acidosis or lack of oxygen and therefore causing inflammation. Is that the mechanism that you think helps treat people with the pain associated with fibromyalgia?
Some of the literature that I've read, written by people that are using hyperbaric to treat fibromyalgia, is that fibromyalgia is actually inflammation of the connective tissue that's layered in between muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And so when, you know, something that works as a powerful anti-inflammatory like hyperbaric oxygen therapy would help that.
Is it still the same load, 1.5 atmosphere, or is there a different protocol for all these different diseases? In other words, go ahead.
1.5 atmospheres works really, really well for anything that's a chronic condition.
Okay.
So around the world, when they're treating chronic neurologic conditions, it's 1.5. When they're treating fibromyalgia, it's 1.5. When you're getting to higher pressures, it's usually because they're treating a diabetic foot ulcer, gangrene, some of the carbon monoxide poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly the lower pressures seem to be just fine. There's a lot of research these days to see if there is any benefit to any higher. But the beautiful thing about treating at 1.5, not only that it's effective, but if you look in the worldwide literature, there is no report of any harm in treating someone at 1.5 atmospheres for 1 hour with 100% medical oxygen. I like the first of all, do no harm approach.
I'm right with you with that one. And you just opened up a question that I'm sure most people want asked. Are there any risks associated with hyperbaric therapy? Who can't have it?
The absolute contraindications would be somebody with an acutely ruptured tympanic membrane. There's some controversy with some of the chemotherapeutic agents, but that's more if you've recently had the chemotherapy, mm-hmm. not if you've had it in the remote past. Like I said, that's a controversial thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, you wouldn't treat somebody with a collapsed lung in a hyperbaric chamber.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some things, if somebody is on a medication where they have to get blood tests to control the level, if they're under hyperbaric treatment, you have to check the blood much more frequently because obviously hyperbaric oxygen therapy changes your metabolic rate. And when you have tremendously enhanced metabolic rate, then you can change the blood levels of things like blood thinners and seizure medicines and things like that.
I don't know if you can answer this question, but I'm just curious. If you have a malignancy, it hasn't been treated, you don't know. I mean, can it make it worse?
Actually, there is a researcher named Dr. Dominic D'Agostino at University of South Florida, and he is researching using hyperbaric oxygen therapy along with a modified ketogenic diet.
Mm-hmm.
And his research is focused on treating advanced and recurring cancers.
Any preliminary findings for him?
What?
Does he have any preliminary findings? Is it working?
He does. He is a PhD and a researcher, but many people are working with his protocols, kind of with naturopathic doctors and having good results. But again, this is kind of flying below the radar right now.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today we're speaking with Dr. Henricks about hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and I'm looking at one of the pages of the Healing Arizona Veterans website, and there's a really interesting article about, are you properly being diagnosed at your VA hospital? And it's a picture of a brain using a brain scan, and they show a normal brain, one with PTSD, one with traumatic brain injury and one with both PTSD and traumatic brain injury. And I put this on my Facebook page. People should go to Medicine on Call Facebook page, because it looks like Swiss cheese at the end with someone with TBI and PTSD. And one of the things I learned in doing research for our talk today is that a CT scan cannot always pick up a traumatic brain injury or a brain that has been injured. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yes. Some of the first levels of a milder traumatic brain injury are just biochemical and physiological changes. If you've had a little bit of a worse concussion injury, then you have some more subtle soft tissue injuries. But this is not something that a head CT scan will see. This is not something that even an MRI with contrast can see. You really need some higher level special brain imaging tests in order to be able to see it. If you don't do a brain MRI with DTI or a brain quality spec scan, you're going to miss a tremendous amount of the traumatic brain injury, concussion injury. And what's true with our football players particularly and other sports players and with our military guys is that they've had a series of milder concussions.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not talking about a large abnormal area of brain like a stroke or a tumor or something big. We're talking about a series of more subtle changes throughout the brain that just don't show up on those tests. And particularly the VA health system and military medicine, they don't do any tests beyond a head CT and an MRI. So if you don't diagnose the problem, then you never have to treat it, or you never see it and you don't treat it.
And then it shows up in other ways down the road. And I'm looking at the limbic system. It seems like there's a pattern with PTSD where the limbic system, and if you can explain that to my listeners what that is, it becomes overactive and the frontal lobe and the cortex becomes underactive and it changes behavior. Can you tell us what that looks like clinically?
Well, I mean, some of the well-known changes of people that have had concussion injuries is depression, apathy, anxiety, uncontrolled anger and rage attacks, problems with attention, concentration, short-term memory. In fact, basically all of these diagnoses that our military veterans are suffering really go back to being a brain injury condition. Many of us now believe that PTSD is not actually a separate condition. It's just another version of a brain injury condition. And if you look at the work of Dr. Daniel Amen in California, who's a psychiatrist that's done spec scan imaging on all of his patients, and all of the psychiatric symptoms you can trace back to areas of abnormal metabolic activity in different parts of the brain. So when you talk about PTSD, there's, you know, somebody who's primarily experiencing a cluster of symptoms called PTSD, they have an abnormal spec scan and they have an abnormal brain MRI DTI. So, you know, the brain is the organ through which we experience or, live our psychiatric symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that made sense. But,
no, it made perfect sense.
If you look at a list of PTSD symptoms, every symptom on the list is also a symptom on the list for traumatic brain injury. It's really not a separate kind of thing. It just depends on specifically how your brain was injured.
Well, let's try to extrapolate this. What about people who haven't been brain injured, but they have anxiety or depression. Is this something that, from a standard psychiatric workup, should be added to a person who presents with these problems? Attention deficit disorder. I mean, are these also metabolic problems that people are trying to treat with these standard, you know, serotonin uptake re-inhibitors and looking at neurotransmitters when it's actually a metabolic problem, not based on neurotransmitters?
Well, certainly it could be a metabolic problem, and certainly many people do benefit from nutrient optimization.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some thinking that maybe more people than we know have experienced consequences of infection and viral encephalitis, and it's just important that before people get diagnosed, well, diagnosing a psychiatric illness is looking at their symptom complex,
mm-hmm.
and putting that in a category, but shouldn't we be looking at the health of the brain and seeing if the brain looks healthy before we medicate somebody?
I think that would be a great idea. And also maybe taking a look at their brain on the medications to see if it has any other effect. I mean, I can't imagine that it's just helping one area when you take something that affects, that goes through the whole system. How do you know it's not affecting another portion of the brain? I mean, you see all of these, and I'm digressing a little bit, but I can't name, for example, one mass shooter in our country, for example, who's not been on some sort of antidepressant or anti-anxiety medication. And they tell you it can make you suicidal and it can make you violent. So I wonder from a, just throwing it out there, from a...
Absolutely. And we know that even one concussion injury can make somebody suicidal. Even one concussion can make someone depressed. And one of the most common things I see in my patients that get a brain MRI DTI after a concussion is injury to the left frontal lobe.
Mm-hmm. And the frontal lobe is really important. Can you explain why the frontal lobe is so important?
Well, the frontal lobe is the seat of executive function. It's where your decision-making comes from. It's also the seat of your social graces. It's what makes you, when you think something, you decide, should I say that or shouldn't I say that? The left frontal lobe is where, when you damage your left frontal lobe, you can be subject to sudden anger and rage attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that if you use transcranial magnetic stimulation to treat depression, they treat your left frontal lobe of your brain.
Well, it sounds fascinating. Just before we take another break in a couple of minutes, talk to us about the nutritional side, because you mentioned that a few times, nutritional optimization. What do you find is the nutrients that usually are lacking in these types of situations?
Well, some of the most important trace minerals, for example, that are necessary for healing reactions are magnesium, zinc, and lithium. Many people who have brain injury, many of our soldiers, and especially some of them that have become homeless, are just generally nutrient lacking. If you check their vitamin D levels and their vitamin B12 levels, their levels are dramatically low.
Hmm.
But so I usually recommend a supplement like Oxalent. I work with a neuropharmacologist who has suggested that Oxalent is one of the best supplements on the market for replacing and restoring trace minerals. It also has electrolytes and the right vitamins.
How do you get that?
Oxalin is a good start.
Where would someone go to purchase that?
That's just over the counter at a place like a Whole Foods or Sprouts or a market like that.
Okay.
And it's one packet a day. It's kind of a step up from emergency.
Okay.
And I encourage my patients to eat avocados because that has a good omega-369 mix, and mixed nuts, another good choice. There's another category of supplements which is not very familiar to most people. It's called smart sugars. Smart sugars come from vine-ripened fruit and vegetable peels, and smart sugars are really important in cell-to-cell communication in the brain, the endocrine system, and the immune system. And we often don't get those nutrients because we often don't eat the peels because we're worried about what might have been sprayed on them or put on them in the supermarket. And very often our vegetables and fruits ripen on the way to market instead of in the field, and some of these essential sugars don't form.
Wow. What about things like coconut oil? I've heard things about the medium-chain fats, and that was good.
Yes, I like coconut oil. I usually talk to people about their eating habits and you know, what kind of oils they're using. But yes, coconut oil I like.
Okay. Let's take a small break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Now, Dr. Hendricks, my producer and I were just talking about how awesome this show is because we've learned so much. And I actually have a question that I'm curious because I'm personally interested in this now. Can you use oxygen therapy, hyperbaric oxygen, as a prevention? Why wouldn't somebody want to do it if they don't have a medical problem so they don't get one?
Some people do come to me and just want 10 sessions just to stay healthy, mm-hmm. and something I always laugh about that I said I should never advertise, this is really good for your hair, skin, and nails. I said if I advertise that, I won't have any room in my chamber to treat my patients with neurologic conditions.
Well, that pretty much summed it up then. There's you answered my question. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, I was just talking to my producer about how oxygen and is necessary. I mean, the brain and the heart are the two organs that need it. They can't really function well in an anaerobic environment. And I would think that things like your concentration and your memory, your focus, are those things that can also be improved by oxygen therapy.
Absolutely. For most of us, it can be improved. There are doctors in Israel that believe that our environment used to be 50% oxygen, and that therefore we're all kind of deficient in the oxygen that's delivered.
Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then everybody should be doing it.
But yeah, certainly.
I also wanted to ask you quickly about the protocol, because we talked about it before the show, and how the Israeli Defense Force, so the Army, uses oxygen, hyperbaric oxygen, on any soldier as their protocol if they've had any traumatic brain injury, and also their citizens. That's how powerful it is, that it's become actually part of their treatment plan.
Yes. Well, in Israel, if one of the IDF has suffered a concussion injury, then they're evaluated with a brain MRI, DPI, a brain quality spec scan, a neuropsych eval, and if it's determined that they've been injured, then they get nutrient optimization, counseling, cognitive therapy, and 60 hours of hyperbaric oxygen therapy before they're reevaluated.
And they
so,
actually...
our guys, our military guys, you know, the ones that I'm seeing have experienced hundreds, if not thousands, you know, obviously more minor concussive forces, but usually it's a mixture of like 9 IEDs, they parachute, the Army Ranger veterans, they're door breachers, so there's all those explosions. Mm-hmm. I mean, our guys have experienced a lot of concussion injury, and all they're being offered is medication.
Which doesn't treat the problem, just mask the symptom. And I would think, well, I've talked to a few that there are so many that make them so sleepy they can barely function. They need something to pick them up in the day to make them function during the day. And sleep is a major issue with this. Can you just talk about that for a second? Because the sleep deprivation, the night terrors, and things like that, I've spoken to soldiers who've, that's been an overriding problem for them, sleep apnea too.
Well, when you have repeated concussive brain injury, you're damaging all the interconnections in your brain. And if you damage all the interconnections for your thalamus, for example, you interfere with your sleep-wake cycle, and these guys just can't go through a regular night of sleep. When you damage all the interconnections, you affect your reticular activating system, which is responsible for you being awake and alert during the day. That's why many of these veterans have been given Provigil to help them stay awake during the day. The night terror symptoms very often come from injury to the temporal lobes. The more concussive exposure, the more disconnection in your brain, and the more difficult it is to function. I can't tell you how many veterans in their 20s have been sitting across from me and told me, they say they feel like they have Alzheimer's, and that no matter how hard they try, they can't get their act together and they can't function. And then they're given all these medications that have black box suicide warnings, and it's just overwhelming to them. They can't see a future for themselves.
And of those soldiers that you've treated, and they've gone through your protocol, and can you just briefly tell us what, somebody comes in, a soldier with those complaints, how many dives, how many treatments do you see before they start to have a recovery? And what's your full treatment regimen?
Usually, after they've had 10 treatments, they tell me that their night terrors are going away. By the time they're at 20, their headaches are getting better, and they're starting to sleep through the night. By the time they're at 40, they notice that their thinking and cognition is getting better. And at that point, I sit down and reevaluate them to determine if they are all better or if we still have symptoms left to treat.
Mm-hmm.
So a veteran that comes to me will get between 40 and 100 treatments.
And I understand, too, that it's not just the cognitive, just the, I guess, the clinical side of it. You're also doing scans as well, right? So you can see from a brain scan standpoint how they started and how they end, and is that how you also quantitate the results of your treatments?
Usually the brain MRI DTI, it makes the most sense to do it at one point and then do it again a year later and not just right after treatment.
Okay.
Because people continue to heal. You know, what you do when you give them the hyperbaric oxygen therapy, you kick in some healing mechanisms. So even my regular patients, they notice that they continue to improve even weeks after they leave the therapeutic part, the hyperbaric treatments.
And how long does the benefit last? Is it lifelong, or is it, do you have any information on that?
It is a healing therapy. I'm not saying that nobody ever needs to come back and get like a boost of 10 treatments or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the healing, probably the best website to look at is the Joe Namath website. What he did was he had severe chronic traumatic encephalopathy from playing football, And he put up his brain imaging and his cognitive testing, and then he did more than 100 hyperbaric treatments. And at the completion of those treatments, his brain was re-imaged. He had neuropsych testing again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he didn't do, you know, any more therapy for the next year. And he had his brain imaged again and the cognitive testing again to prove that he had maintained the healing that he had from the initial hyperbaric.
Wow.
Well, so his is the best website to prove that point. But other articles and references are available on the treatnow.org website.
Is that the best way to also reach you?
To reach me?
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best way to reach me is through the NorthStarHBOT.com website.
Okay.
I'm the only one that answers.
Okay.
That would be answering any of those questions, so that's the best way to get through.
Well, I'll definitely put that up on my Facebook page, and I'll tweet it out so that people can get more information and find out more about you. And I just want to thank you for an enlightening hour, and I can't wait to share more of what I've learned today with my patients in the future. And I wish you a happy Thanksgiving and Godspeed.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for giving me the chance to talk about hyperbaric oxygen therapy and healing. I think it's a really, really exciting option that hopefully a lot of us will start bringing into our practice.
Well, thank you. And I look forward to having you on again. And thank you, everybody, for listening to Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.